morning, everybody. Morning. My name is Asger Bauer. I am the secretary for the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. I welcome everyone here this morning. In the absence of the chairperson, Mr. Sifago, who has been booked off sick until further notice, we, in terms of Ethiopia Rules 92, committee has to elect an active chairperson for the session. I now call for nominations for the election of the acting chairperson. Mr. Singh?
Call the name, Mr. Kai.
I have the Honorable Singh nominating Mr. Hai. I recognize Mr. Prince. Mrs. Prince has seconded the nomination. Are there any further nominations? In the absence of any further nominations, I hand over to Mr. Hai to act as chairperson for the session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, Peter. Without wasting time, let's start with the meeting. I'll start by introducing myself and ask the honorable members to introduce themselves and the parliamentary support staff to introduce themselves, and then ask both departments here, or just one at this stage. Which department is it? Agriculture. Or both departments will introduce themselves, and then we ask staff to make presentation. We then allow the honorable members to ask questions for clarities, and we will be done with the staff, and then we then do the same with regard to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. My name is Manda Adjekai. I'm a member of the committee, the Land and the Mineral Resource. I represent the Eastern Cape. Can I hand over to members?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Ellen Prince. I'm a member of this committee and I represent the Eastern Cape.
My name is Omi Singh. I'm a member of this committee representing KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bayer Smith representing Limpopo.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kathy Labuschkoffney. I'm representing the Western Cape.
Good morning. I'm Lennox Keller. I'm representing Eastern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Bridget Mabango, representing Gauteng.
Can I ask the parliamentary South staff?
Morning. Kruger Juster, researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everybody. Once again, Asger Bauer, committee secretary.
Beijing Pillay, content advisor.
Good morning, Matilda Litago, executive secretary.
Chantal Ara, executive secretary.
Amanda Finan, committee assistant.
Can I ask the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries?
Good morning, honorable members, honorable chair, colleagues. My name is Mukutule Joe Kobokwe. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for food security and agrarian reform.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Tozamile Lukalo, responsible for national extension reform within the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. I work within the branch of food security and agrarian reform.
Good morning. My name is Tiso Magluani from the DG's office, office sport.
Good morning, honorable members. Honorable day. My name is Winston Bakis. I'm the director in the office of the director general.
Okay, can we go on and the Department of Land Development, because they are here, if they can introduce themselves.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Tamim Dontwa. I'm a Deputy Land Claims Commissioner in the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights in the entity of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues and honourable members. My name is also the fellow parliamentary liaison officer for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members and colleagues. My name is Bongi Nkosi Zulu, acting deputy director general for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Morning, honourable members. My name is Eugene Southgate. I'm the acting director general for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Mko from PNG.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. The apology that we will receive is from the Minister from DAF, Honourable L. Zohwana, and also the Director General of the Department. Those are the two apologies that we have received. Just a concern that you know the schedule of the program of the select committee. The minister and the deputy minister attended these meetings and we were very happy. We thought that was going to be a trend. We see that they now disappeared. We have not seen the director general for some time, always in every meeting. We get the deputies. Whereas with the Department of Rural Development, we've never seen a minister. There are two deputy ministers, never seen a single one. They still need to introduce themselves in one of the select committee meetings because the members do not know them. Honorable Taylor.
Hello, Chairperson. No, just on your comment. I think it's unfair that especially with rural development, where you have two deputy ministers, when you cannot have a political aid in these meetings here, and we want you to take that up with us. It's really unfair to us as committee members, because we're going to ask some questions that will need a reply here, and really, maybe if you can take it up with us, please, on behalf of the committee. Thank you.
Can I allow those who just join us to introduce themselves? I'll note that Honorable Matebas, if you can introduce yourself.
Oh, good morning. My name is Abuyisela April Matebas. I'm a member of this committee representing the Northern Cape.
Good morning, dear and honorable members. I'm Dennis Sukin. I work for CNC, which is a public affairs consultancy. And I'm here on behalf of some clients of ours.
All right, thank you very much. We will now allow the department to make a presentation. But the point that was raised by Honorable Gaila, we will be writing letters to both the departments raising our concerns. So we will update the meeting when we meet again sometime. We allow the department to make a presentation, and then after we allow members to ask questions or clarities. What I should also emphasize is that the department should note the questions properly, because even after you have responded to the questions, we still expect you to respond to those questions in writing. That applies also to the Department of Rural Development when it's your turn to make presentations. Can we allow the staff to make presentations? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, colleagues from Rural Development and colleagues from DAF, before I get into the presentation, Honorable Chair, I also just wanted to register an apology of the Honorable Deputy Minister. I was actually even given a written communique just as evidence that he sent an apology not to be here today. Thanks. Honorable Chair, I will be making a presentation, but documents have been circulated before. I take it that members have had the time to go through the documents. Nevertheless, it is still on the screen, and we'll go through the presentation. I'll be working with my colleague this side, and I'll keep giving him a signal to say click so that the slide can move. If we can go, I'm making a presentation on our national extension policy. Status report in terms of its development and its implementation. But before I get into the presentation, I would like to say to members that extension and advisory services is a very, very important and strategic function in agriculture and in land reform. In fact, there are those who believe that without an effective extension and advisory service, we will not have a successful land reform in this country. And ever since the dawn of democracy, the Department of Agriculture has come up with new measures of strengthening extension and revitalizing it to make sure that it responds, you know, to the challenges facing our emerging producers and to land reform beneficiaries. I will go now into the outline. That's the outline. We'll look at the methodology and key program areas, which is a very important slide because the policy is actually in response to the problem areas. And then we'll look at the purpose, we'll look at the aim and goal of the policy, and we'll also look at the key objectives of the policy. It's also a very important slide. We'll also look at the scope of the policy, role of extension and advisory service, co-extension methods, policy intervention measures, because that's the very crux. That's what the policy is all about. What is it that we are proposing as intervention? And then implementation coordinating structures nationally, provincially, and at district level. And then we'll also look at the key policy outcomes. At the end of it all, once everything has been said and done, what outcomes are we looking for? And of course, the following one, policy and research impact, what impact are we looking for? Then we'll also very briefly look at the status on progress and intergovernmental approval process. We may go to the next slide on the methodology. That is a diagram representing the methodology we followed in generating this policy. Suffice to say that the first phase, as you see it, focuses on literature review. It is very important that when you develop policy, you do some sort of situational analysis. You look at different extension models all over the world, different extension practices and so forth. And in and to do that, you have to therefore consult a variety of documents and literature. And so phase one focused on that. Phase two represents a consultative process where different stakeholders were brought together and discussions were held, opinions were held, and information was shared. So phase two, that is. And then phase three represents a phase where the drafting of the policy commenced. I must hasten to say, Honorable Chair, that this particular policy has enjoyed widespread consultation. Looking at the key problem areas, what is it that we are attempting to address with this policy? The first problem is that there is currently, or as and when we're developing the policy, very proving cases, connection between research and extension and producers. And this is an anomaly because you have to find a very, very strong relationship and linkages between, because what extension officers do on the ground, they are supposed to feed into institutions of higher learning so that those become areas of research. And at the same time, once that research information has been obtained, the results have been obtained, then they are taken back to the producers. The second major problem that is buffeting extension is the low extension practitioner to producer ratio. There is a recommended ratio, you know, when you look at extension practice. For example, it is recommended that one extension should service, say, between 400 and 450 farmers at any particular point in time, depending on the type of farming. But currently, as we look, because of the numbers on the ground, one extension officer is servicing almost between 800 and 1,200 farmers. And therefore, the impact cannot be that great. We're also saying that disintegrated efforts from different extension support agencies, there's no coordination. You know, we've got different players in extension, but there's no coordination. They're not talking to one another. Everybody is doing his own or her own piece of work. Lack of national policy and regulatory. There has always been an absence of a regulatory framework for extension, such that things were therefore not effectively coordinated. There was no uniformity, practices were not harmonized, and so forth. If you were to look at one province, it would be doing different things from another province. And therefore, for the first time, we have come up with a policy which will ensure that there is a regulated environment as far as extension is concerned. Limitations with the extension education system and narrow service focus. We are saying extension cannot just be narrow in terms of its focus. It has to be broad. For example, in many instances, it has to look at the entire value chain and assist all the players within the value chain with appropriate information. So the policy is an attempt, you know, to come up with measures which would assist, address, you know, those challenges. The purpose of this policy, therefore, is to deliver and maintain a pluralistic, harmonized, and coordinated extension and advisory service. Pluralistic because we are saying there is no single extension method that can be promoted throughout, you know. It depends on the different circumstances which particular method you use at that point in time. And that's why we're using the word pluralistic. To respond to the needs, aspirations, opportunities, and other circumstances of the many actors in the respective value chains. As I said earlier, there are many role players in the value chain, and an extension service must be able to address the needs of all these people in the value chain, to recognize the overall livelihood context within which extension advisory service operate, and the support of producers on a wider livelihood system and sustainable development. We're also saying there is a livelihood environment within which, and this livelihood environment within which a producer, you know, operates differs from one situation to the other. The extension office must be able to adapt to such differing situations. To support the implementation of the NDP, Integrated Growth and Development Program, and the APAP Agricultural Policy Action Plan, we have just come up with, in response to the NDP, an IPAP, we have come up with Agriculture Policy Action Plan, and we are saying our extension service must be able to support those particular national interventions. In terms of aims, we've got those three aims set a regulatory framework. This is almost a repeat of the purpose. A regulatory framework to guide the agriculture, forestry and fisheries sectors in the provision of extension, provide a common framework and set of principles to achieve shared overarching objectives and priorities set out in those national strategies, facilitate establishment of effective and efficient extension advisory service. So in broad terms, those are the aims of this policy that we are currently pursuing. Those are the goals. As you know, goals are long-term. Ensure that all actors in the value chain enjoy equitable and optimum access to the knowledge and skills and have the capacity to explore opportunities for the advancement of their livelihood. Ensure knowledge transfer and skills development as the foundation for equitable, productive, competitive, profitable and sustainable agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and to respond to users' expressed economically viable needs, ambitions and circumstances. Now, policy objectives, I have already indicated that we do have specific challenges, and these objectives are therefore a response, you know, to those challenges. To ensure effective linkages, exchange of information between research, extension and producers. This is a very, very important facet of extension, and it has been a missing link in our service. To establish a professional, accessible, reliable, relevant and accountable national extension and advisory service that is result-orientated, want an accountable extension, you know. And first and foremost, extension must be accountable to the farmer, you know, himself, who receives the service. And that is the reason why extension service must adapt, you know, to the needs of the farmer as a starting point. To ensure a pluralistic and coordinated approach for the provision of extension and advisory service by public, private and non-profit organizations, want coordination, you know, whoever is providing extension, there must be some way of, somehow, there must be a way of these people talking to one another. To transform and align the core competencies of extension practitioners towards the comprehensive development agenda, this will require a lot of interventions when it comes to capacity building, training, and further training of these extension practitioners so that they can be up to date with developments and so forth, to promote and implement the value chain approach for integrated and holistic support services. Scope of the policy. The policy applies to the three sectors in all rural and urban areas of South Africa. It covers all scales of production and processing by all types of South Africans. That is the value chain that we are talking about, regardless of their socio-economic background. It applies to all modes of extension and advisory service delivery by government, private sector, NGOs, and other role players. Yes. As the role of extension and advisory services assists producers to access relevant advisory service, I think it is common knowledge, and I'll therefore run very quickly through that slide. Producers to identify, overcome production enterprise and marketing challenges, work with producers in technology development, you know, every now and then producers require a new technology of some sort. Provides information to research institutions on producer production constraints, empowers and build capacity of producers, share knowledge and strengthen individual and collective capacity to work with greater self-reliance and coherence. Core extension methods. We have already talked to this particular issue to say there is no single extension model or approach suited to all situations in South Africa. Approaches and methods must be adapted to local situations and conform to the aforementioned. The choice and combinations of extension methods for implementation of the program must be dictated by the prevailing conditions. In recent decades, the concept of extension has broadened. Current approaches emphasize the concept of advice, facilitation, empowerment, and learning. And therefore, we talk about facilitation and learning-based extension, which places the extension worker in a more responsive role as a knowledge broker. They've got mammoth responsibility, these people, and therefore they must be kept abreast of the developments at all times. An effective extension facilitator helps producers to find solutions to a complex challenges. Policy interventions, and I'll have to move very fast here. On the left there of the table, you see the measure that we are recommending as intervention, and then on the right are recommended policy actions. Improved access to quality extension and advisory service that is professional, reliable, and accountable. And then on the right there, we are talking about what is it that we should do. And these things are pronounced by the policy that this is what should happen. So that we respond to that intervention, we achieve that intervention, we need to do. We need to recruit competent extension officers. And we also need to register these extension officers with professional bodies to ensure that their code of conduct is regulated to a point. To facilitate a pluralistic and integrated approach to provide extension and advisory service. Advance the extension education system and broaden service. And there we're talking about the curricula of extension officers, you know, and we are saying that at university level, the curriculum must be considered such that it is multidisciplinary. It places this extension officer in an advantageous position to be able to deal with the multiplicity of issues at any particular point in time. But we're also talking about professional development. You know, an extension officer must attend conferences, must do study tours and see how extension is done in other places and so forth, must be kept abreast in terms of development. Promote commodity value chain, integrate marketing and value chain aspects in the extension. Extension practitioners must become champions of the value chain. Effective and efficient linkage mechanism between research, extension, and producers. Those are the core policy actions that we are recommending. Design participatory and integrated institutional structures that bring together extensions, research, and producers at national, provincial, and there we are talking about the extension forums that we are proposing must be established at national, provincial, and at district level, where these people come together on a regular basis to discuss issues that are affecting production and producers. Design a user-friendly ICT. We've gone past the information age. Some people say we are now in the knowledge age, and ICT is very, very critical. It's at the center of what is happening. And therefore, these people must be very literate when it comes to ICT. Facilitate demand-driven research and extension. Research must be based on identified needs. It must not just be research for the sake of research. And extension plays a very important role in terms of feeding into demand-driven research, because they have first-hand experience on the ground, and they are supposed to feed into the extension agenda, the research agenda. Organize smallholder producers into commodity groups to ensure that they have a voice in all research process. Develop a multilinguistic approach in line with dissemination of information, to a point that even farmers, producers on the ground who cannot speak English, you know, research must be so accessible to ensure that it is even in languages which can be understood by the producers. The next slide, Honorable Chair and members, is a reflection on the institutional mechanism that we are recommending to coordinate extension. We've already talked about that at the top is a national extension coordinating forum. And on the right there, you see people who could be part and parcel of such a national structure. Then you also have a provincial extension coordinating forum for all the provinces that have in this. And each province will further have district, you know, and those are the people. And just visualize a situation like that where these people will regularly come together to discuss problems of the producer. Provincial indications enable the provincial Department of Agriculture to provide a holistic, well-coordinated and collaborative approach, improve, implement and monitor extension and advisory services, strategies, norms and standards, create a coordinated platform and space for different actors to play specific roles in the development of a prosperous and sustainable agricultural sector. Ensure combined capacity and knowledge base within public, private and non-profit actors can be synergized and channeled towards the advancement of agriculture, forestry and fisheries. Key policy outcomes, what is it that we'll achieve? As I move towards concluding my presentation, as at the end of the day, we want to emerge with an effective and efficient linkage mechanism between research, extension and producers. An active linkage. And we're also saying we want to see an improved access to quality extension and advisory service that is professional, you know, that is up to date, you know. Well coordinated, pluralistic and integrated approach in provision of extension, as we say, an extension that adapts to every situation. Advanced extension education system and commodity value extension. But another important outcome here is that one of extension to farmer ratios, where the numbers balance to make the extension officer effective. The impact sustainable food, if we to achieve such a vision of that extension, but are short of food and nutrition security for all, because our producers will be able to produce optimally. Self-reliant and confident producers through shared knowledge enabled producers and processors to contribute and benefit from prosperity of South Africa while pursuing their chosen livelihoods. Enhanced capacity of personnel, strengthened and empowerment of producer organizations of commodity groups, and integrated interventions through establishment of provincial directorates for extension and advisory services. We are saying even at provincial level, we would want to see statutory units established as part of the organizational structures of provincial departments. Funding mechanisms. Government of South Africa remains committed to the provision of extension and advisory without a charge, because it's a government service. Those extension officers are employed by government and they are paid for the work that they are doing. A user pay principle will apply in the case of producers and members of producer organizations that can afford to pay for services rendered. You know, particularly if you think in the context of private extension, because we still have private extension service in South Africa. Outsourcing, co-financing, contracting service and private funding should be implemented to solve the problem of fiscal sustainability, integration of the private sector into the public extension and advisor is encouraged. We want this cooperation between private and public extension. And then finally, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this policy has been consulted widely, and we want to say different number of stakeholders were consulted, you know, the ARC, commodity groups, you know, agricultural unions and so forth. including institutions of higher learning. The policy was tabled at EXCO of DAF. DAF is the decision, EXCO is the decision making of DAF. And then MINTEC is a structure where you have HODs of provincial departments. It is chaired by the Director General of DAF. It was presented on the 9th of July 2014. And then we were requested to send it once again to different, and we did that. We sent it to other different stakeholders. Specifically, we remember that we were asked to send it to the University of Stellenbosch and so on. So we sent it there for further inputs, and those were received. The policy was once again presented at MINTEC on the 11th of September 2014, and it was also tabled at MINMEC, which is a structure of minister and MCs. And the policy implementation was tabled and approved by MINMEC on that date. What is remaining, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is for the policy now to be taken to the cluster of DGs, you know, and the cabinet clusters, and ultimately to cabinet for approval. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I apologize for taking more time.
Yes. Master, you will hesitate by 2 minutes. All right. Can I then allow members to ask questions? But what I wanted just to indicate that in future, when you are going to make presentation, when you send us the PowerPoint, you should also send us the actual policy.
Yeah.
No, not just the PowerPoint. Yeah. So I just wanted to indicate that. That goes for Department of Rural Development as well. When you come here to present, make sure that you also have the policy of whatever you'll be presenting. It's fine, you can present, use a PowerPoint, but we need the actual document. Yeah. Thank you. I'll note Honorable Prince, Honorable Smith, Honorable Lapustafni, Honorable Masango, yeah, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it is just relevant to compliment the department on this policy. I think to address the long overdue exercise because we experienced a need long time ago in this department. There is no support to the small upcoming farmers. And I'm really glad that you eventually come up with a policy to address the problem. The next question that I want to ask is what will be the minimum requirements for an extension officer? Thank you. Okay. Yeah, the other question, what is the current ratio in how will land reform beneficiaries be accommodated and prioritized? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Specifically on the extension officers, firstly, I want to know why are we only acting on this now? If we look at 800 to 1,200 farmers per extension officer, it means each extension officer has to visit at least 3 to 5 farms every day, including Sundays, to reach them. And that is beyond the seminars and the study tours and all those other things. The second thing I want to know is timelines. When are we going to get this right? And what is the department's plan to make sure that that happens? In terms of the policy, it gives frameworks, it's like all the other plans, but what do we do to make sure that it gets implemented? What are we going to do to make sure that it actually happens, that it's not just nice words written on a piece of paper?
I've got a few questions. May I proceed?
If I go to page or to slide 4, I would like to know that there it says the lack of a national policy and a regulatory framework to provide formal guidelines, working status and governing code of ethics. Up to now, why did it take such a long time to provide this regulatory framework? And if you say so, does a policy that we're talking about now, that we don't have the policy. I didn't have the policy to read. So do I assume that this regulatory framework that you refer to is the policy? That's my first question. Then on the same slide, on page 4, the last one, limitations of the extension education system and various services provided. I would like to know, what is the status quo? If you state, this is one of the problem areas, so that, as it's been stated here, there's limitations in that system now. And I would like you to clarify what are those, the status quo now versus what it's going to be. Okay? Then, I want to go to slide 6. I would like to know the last thing there is saying facilitate establishment of effective and efficient extension and advisory services. Do I take it that the existing services as it is now in 2014 is thus being ineffective and inefficient? And if it is so, would you please give us a clear indication of what exactly do you mean by the statement? What is ineffective and what is inefficient? Then on slide 8, second bullet point, to establish professional, accessible, reliable, relevant and accountable national extension and advisory services, that is results orientated. This whole, all these things that's been here, the policy objectives, there's one reference made in the back of the document to all the organizations that you included in consultation, but this policy objectives, I would like to know what is the specific role of the ARC and any other departments and entities that you consulted and or are they still going to play an active role in trying to reach the objectives. Chairs, maybe I just want to, I've got some more questions, but maybe then on page 12, I would like to know, you refer there in the second under core policy actions, certify and ensure the competence of extension professionals through registration with the recognized and credible professional body. I would like to know, do you envision a new registration body? Or are they going to register with the same, with the existing one? What is the status quo there? And review and develop multidisciplinary training curriculum for extension practitioners. How will that be different from the existing curriculum? Does it mean that you're going to foresee a new curriculum? Then on 13? Yeah. I would just design participating in integrated institutional structures that will bring together extension, all those things, and specifically there. These structures, is that the forms that you refer to, and specifically on provincial level, that's a little bit later on, I just remember it. What will be the status of these forms? Will it be an advisory status or a mandating status? How will it be, and will that be feedback? Will it be feedback to the farmers and the existing extension officers, or to whom will it be accountable? And how will that lines work? And then on page 14, I just want to know, referring to May, DISCO ordinary structure has been is that part of the policy that DISCO ordinating structure, national coordinating structure, has to be implemented? If not, the situation could exist that every province will do what they find applicable to them according to the policy and implement it in any way they would like to implement it. Then the last question I'm going to ask is, what is the cost of the implementation of this policy? Is any costing being done? If not, why not? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the questions have been covered by my colleagues, but I just need to know if there is a timeline, if everything went according to plan, what are we looking at in terms of the timeline for the policy to be being implemented? I wanted to find out about the estimation of the cost, if there was any. And also, at the moment, the present moment, how many accession officers do we have in the country? And, you know, the sort of coverage of those detention officers in throughout the country where they are providing the service. And the presentation identified problems and that were listed in the presentation, and I would like to know what mechanisms are currently in place to address those problems. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Gaida.
Thank you, Jefferson. Let me also have my input. I think this type of policy is long overdue. And if it is what it is on paper, it should benefit the people out there. But just a few clarities. One is a requirement for extension officers. What would your requirement be? And also, in your recruitment, are you going to target youth and spread it all over South Africa? Because sometimes in these recruitments are done, you find that the rural youth are not involved. Then the benefit for the rural, and you just be more, explain more on that. Then on page 14, on your slide, the National Accessible Coordinating Committee, you could just explain to us how is this committee going to work? Is there going to be a budget for this committee? If there's a budget for it, is it going to have its own CEO and so on and so? And I also see here you've got, last year you see producers, associates and others. What are the others? If you can just explain to us, well, what do you mean by others? Do you mean stakeholders? The different bodies in agriculture out there. So if you can just explain more on that. Of course, you say may consist, but when I look at the province, you say it may consist of the provincial extension officers. But now, one would like to know, and we'll have a national in the province as well. So that this thing is totally coordinated, or else we're going to have every province is running its own thing. So if you can just explain to us those shootings, but the process is long overdue. That does not, one is happy to, and when do you think it will be implemented? We do these policies, but when do you think, by when can this policy be implemented? So if you can give me clarity on those, thank you.
All right. No, thank you very much. I think those are the questions that one can relate to, firstly, to welcoming the policy. The point that is emphasized that it's been a long-awaited policy. But also, the also the other issue that comes up strongly, as it would have been better if there was also an implementation plan, because at this age, good intentions. If you can also talk to that. But also there's a concern about the issue of the ratio. If you can talk to that, also the funding, whether TRISAL will make funding available. But I think the other issue that was raised by Honorable Abdullah is that when you talk about the problem statement, it would be better is that on page 5 there is a slide that talks to measures, intervention measures. If you can start with problem statement, then intervention measures and so forth. But those problem statements do not disappear. You are able to address them with regard to the interventions that you're coming up with here. Can you please respond?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. I take it that we'll be allowed to respond to questions jointly with my colleague here. All right. I'll answer some of the questions and then he'll respond to some of the questions. Firstly, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the compliment. I have recorded here about 25 questions. That were asked. But we'll try to be very brief in terms of responding. All of them are good questions. Minimum qualifications. Let me start off by saying the fact that we are talking of a policy now doesn't mean that nothing has been done in the meantime. Particularly since 1994, we have been implementing what we call Expansion Recovery Plan from 2008 up to now. And this Expansion Recovery Plan is funded by the National Treasury. My colleague knows the figures so far, how many millions have been spent into this Expansion Recovery Plan, but we'll talk more to it later. Now, as part of the Extension Recovery Plan, we have gotten into the exercise. Remember that we are coming from a disunited South Africa, where we had extension officers, in the homelands, and we had extension officers in the Republic of South Africa. So there was a need to harmonize, requirements, the qualifications, and we came up with measures to say nobody will be called an extension officer unless he's got matric plus 4, a 4-year degree. So it is a requirement now. You cannot be employed as an extension officer unless you have a 4-year degree post matric. The current extension to farmer ratios, this one is still a sad situation. One of the pillars of the Extension Recovery Plan focused on recruitment of extension officers. By the time when we started with the Extension Recovery Plan, we had about 2,000 extension officers. I'm talking about government-employed extension officers. I think it was about 2,200 extension officers. And ever since we implemented the Extension Recovery Plan, we went into a very aggressive recruitment program, and we have been able to increase extension officers to about 3,400 total number of extension officers now as we speak. And the reason for that is because, as all of us know, recruitment is the turnaround as far as recruitment is concerned is a bit long, You have to advertise, do the shortlisting and interview, and recommended candidates go for screening and so forth. So because of that. But I think the progress we have achieved so far is satisfactory in terms of because we've been able to recruit more than 1,000 up to so far. Why are we acting only now? As I indicated, it's not that we are acting only now. We are acting only now in terms of policy, but we have been doing other things like the extension recovery plan. But I would also give the Honorable Member the benefit of doubt that maybe we are a little bit late, you know, because 20 years since 1994, we could have considered doing this policy area because it is a very important intervention. Timeline, when are we getting, what are we doing, when are we getting things right to ensure implementation? We are already implementing. The fact that we are talking of a policy doesn't mean we are not. We are already implementing some parts of this policy. For example, we are talking of recruitment. Our extension recovery plan is talking about recruitment. There is a section where we're talking about registration of extension officers. That process is already underway, where extension officers have been registered with a professional body called SACNAP. Extension officers have been doing qualifications, upgrading. They have been trained in many, many short skills training programs and so forth. And members, honorable members, will see when we present written responses to these questions, you know, the numbers of extension officers who have upgraded qualifications and the number that have gone have undergone a short skills training programs and so forth. When we provide those details, members will be able to see them. Why did it take such a long time to come up with this regulatory framework, this policy? I think I've responded to that. We do accept that maybe this policy should have come earlier, you know, but we have been doing other things like the extension recovery plan. I mean, to come up with a plan like that and to get it funded, you know, is not a very easy thing. For it to be accepted by National Treasury and to be funded is not an easy thing. I'll ask my colleague to address the question on limitations of the education system and what is the status quo in terms of that. And slide 6 is the current system ineffective or inefficient, and specific role of entities consulted like ARC and the commodity organizations, and registration with professional bodies. If you could just address those four. I'll go to curriculum.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and thank you, the DTC as well, Mr. Obogwe. I think let me start first on the timelines, DTC, in terms of the policy to be implemented. What we need to remember, this policy will actually have a short-term program that will be implemented, medium-term, as well as long-term thing that needs to be done. And then secondly, I also want to emphasize that the policy, when it was being presented to all the intergovernmental approval processes, and the one that was still going to consult, it actually has its implementation plan. It goes with the implementation plan. And when it's going to be sent to the members here now, it will come with its implementation plan. So it will be the policy and the implementation plan. And that implementation plan actually identify all the programs that will need to be implemented. And some of those programs are the multidisciplinary approach training that we are looking at. We are going to establish a task team that is going to be represented by all the relevant stakeholders as well as the academia, especially those that are involved in agriculture, to come up with a report that with clear recommendations in terms of what exactly should the extension officers be trained on so that they are specialists in terms of extension. But I think, colleagues, I used to be in a meeting with colleagues. I think, honorable members, the problem that we have in terms of the multidisciplinary training is not a unique situation only for South Africa.
We have a forum that is called the Global Forum for Rural Advisory Services, where all countries are members for essential advisory services. There is a task team that has been identified. It will be sitting next week from Monday to Friday in Boxbeck. It's coming from all other countries. The problem that we have in terms of the multidisciplinary approach is an international problem in terms of coming up with a clear. Because the question that we need to ask ourselves on is, what are those institutions, probably four institutions, that we can say they are specializing in terms of training extension? We don't have them in South Africa, in terms of those that are specializing in training extension officers. You'll find specialists in animal science, specialists in soil science, but you don't grow up to the level of having a specialist in extension. That's why we need a multidisciplinary approach on extension. So one of the projects to address that will be also to come up with a report, and that report will identify core competency areas for extension. But we are not only alone in doing that as this international body, which is Global Forum for Rural Advisory Services. What do we do to make it happen? Let me tell that one. We are going to establish the forums, the national forum, the provincial forum, as well as the district forum. These forums will actually be adapted to a provincial and district situations. That's why you have in one of the chapters, on one of the slides here, slide 14, where it was said, others. This is an example in terms of how these forums will be established. You'll find out the stakeholders that are in Limpopo are totally different to the stakeholders that are in Eastern Cape as well as Western Cape, purely because of the geographic area. You won't find people of Banana in Eastern Cape, but you'll find citrus. So the stakeholders will be determined by the type of production that is happening in that area. That's why you have others. We are developing terms of reference. And those terms of reference for the national, they will be generic, which tells how these forums should be established. But when it comes to provinces, it will be adapted in terms of the stakeholder representation, depending on vertical situation in that province as well as that district in that province.
What was the other one?
The registration with a professional body. In 2011-2012, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries came up with a feasibility study to find out, do we need to establish a new professional body for extension, or do we need to identify an existing one? And that study, both private sector, like the Great South Africa, the Citrus Growers Association, Banana Association, Avocado Association, those extension practitioners were actually part of that, because you'll establish that, you'll find out that nurses have a concern, a professional body. The educators have a professional board. I'm just making an example. But when it comes to extension officers, there was nothing. That's why we came up with that project. And the outcome of the feasibility study was to say, let us identify an existing one, because there will be too much cost to establish a new one. And then secondly, to have a professional body, you need an act which will take probably something like 10 to 12 years. And we had to frustrate the process. Then SACNAP, which is the South African Council for Natural Scientific Professions, which is under the Act of Number 27 of 2003, is already registering soil scientists, aquatic science, animal science. That was the closest home for extension officers, because all these other fields of practice, they work with extension officers, the animal science and the soil scientists. Fortunately, we were allowed then by SACNAS to register extension officers. And the process is ongoing, it's rolled out to all provinces. We are left with about one province now, Northern Cape. We went to all provinces, and so far, more than 2,000 extension practitioners have registered with their professional body. That's where we are making them accountable and reliable in terms of service. Because if they are not accountable, if they don't do their work as expected in terms of the code of ethics, then that body will deregister them, and then they won't be able to work.
The The question on the costing, I think the implementation plan that we will forward when we will give those indications, because the implementation plan is supposed to give that particular implementation. Yes. Yeah. You can also talk.
Yeah. Let me talk to the implementation plan. The implementation plan is actually coming up with different programs which will be developed and costed. So the implementation plan does not have an actual amount of costing. It has different programs that we come up with, and we say when we implement that program, then we will have to cost that program. But I must say and emphasize, he mentioned the extension recovery program. That is the program that is helping the implementation of extension currently. All the programs that we are running so far, even the registration of extension officers, we track now, because there must be an application fee and there must be a registration fee. Because of that PIN for professionalization of extension, we are also making use of that fund that we got from Treasury to make sure that we restructure extension. So currently, there won't be any additional funding that will be needed for implementing the policy.
I think the question on the total number of extension practitioners, I think I've indicated that we have a little over 3,000 now, you know, countrywide of extension officers. But since the implementation of the recovery plan, we have been able to recruit a little over 1,000. But the exact numbers will accompany our written responses, but we have a little over 3,000, which is, comparatively speaking, which is still very less. Yes, if you think of the total number of smallholder producers we have in the country, we're still, and if you look at other practices in countries like India and Sweden and others, you know, you really need warm bodies on the ground to have producers almost on a daily basis. I've already talked to, but this question, honourable members, is very, very critical. This one requirements for extension officers. We've already talked about the multidisciplinary nature of their service, the fact that they have to be abreast of the developments that are taking place, the changes. For example, these days we are talking of climate smart agriculture, you know. Climatic conditions are gradually changing, and our extension officers must be abreast of these changes. And therefore, it is very important that an extension officer, number one, is well qualified, but number two, has those generic skills that are necessary for a practicing extension officers. You know, generic skills such as project management. You know, basic generic skill like project management, like communication, you know, the ability to communicate to producers and so forth. You know, negotiation skills, you know, conflict resolution skills and so forth. That's the type of an extension officer that we should have, who should interact with our producers. Is the recruitment for all provinces? Yes, it is for all provinces. All provinces were allocated a certain amount of money on an annual basis to recruit a certain number of extension officers. And honorable members will get those figures per province as when we submit written responses to this question. How is the national coordinating structure going to work, funded, and so forth? If I may just, these structures, honorable members, for example, the national one, I'm envisioning that the national department, you know, through the unit's extension reform, or the chief directorate extension reform, will serve as a secretariat to that forum.
okay, to assist it, you know, to execute its functions properly, particularly at the very beginning, you know, to work with it in terms of convening meetings, to work with it in terms of making sure that there are venues and so forth, you know. It will have to work hand in hand. The same with the provincial ones. You'll remember that earlier we talked about the importance of establishing, you know, units in provincial departments of agriculture, which are responsible for extension. Those units must be responsible, you know, to work hand in hand with these provincial structures and to serve as their secretariat. So at the very beginning, it will be very important to support these structures through these units, also in terms of funding, you know, getting venues for, yeah.
Sister, may I please ask one clarifying question while the DG is busy explaining this on the forums. These forums, as you explained now, will that be statutory bodies or advisory bodies? I know it's one of the policy, but will they have a statutory status or only advising and regulating?
Members, they are not statutory. Yeah, they are advisory. They are a platform where all players can come together on a regular basis to discuss important issues pertaining to extension. And that is the reason why the role of government will be very important in terms of facilitation and in terms of secretariat services to make sure that those meetings take place.
Sir, can I please... I want to indicate that at 2:30 should be done because we must start with the Department of Development. So I suggest that you look at the key ones and respond to them, and then the rest will be responded to in writing. I'm worried about time.
Yeah, let me... Thank you, sir. Let me touch on the current ratio of extension. As far as what is recommended. What is recommended, it depends on an enterprise. But it varies from one extension practitioner to 450 farmers in terms of service standard. But in other enterprises like Livestock, it will be one extension officer to 500 farmers. That's the requirement that we have to do. But currently, the DDG when he was presenting, he said it's sitting at one extension officer to 500 in 1,000, depending on where, on which province they're operating on. But currently, it's not where we want it to be, in which there should be more recruitment of extension officers vis-a-vis the number of farmers that we have. And then secondly, there was a question also on the role of ARC. I think we missed that. We should have emphasized. The ARC, in collaboration with DAF, they developed the policy. We worked on the policy together. We worked on the implementation plan together. And we understand the rollout and implementation of the policy going forward. I think, Chair, those were the main ones that I wanted to.
And just also, just from a technical point of view, the ARC is a research institution. That is where research is being conducted. And therefore, automatically, it makes them a very important player in this policy. Most so, we are recommending that there should be a strong link between research and extension and the farmer. I think, Honorable Chair, we have touched on very important questions, but there will be a follow-up written responses.
Hello.
Chair, I have two questions for the written response, please. It's follow-up questions from the answers.
It's in writing, please.
Okay.
And I also ask the other members to do the same. If you've got even new questions, you're not limited to those that have been responded to. Even new questions you can send to the secretary, and secretary will send to the department. Thank you for your understanding. Can I then thank the department for the presentation and the response to the questions? It's a very interesting issue that members would definitely like to engage with going forward. So we will definitely call you next year, because this is the last meeting for you this year. We'll call you definitely next year to get an update
on the implementation, more interested also on the implementation plan and on how we're taking the policy forward. Thank you very much for coming and your presentation. Thank you. We now ask you to excuse so that the department can occupy this place so that we can also make their own presentation. Thank you very much. If you are interested to listen to the department's input, you can occupy the place that we occupy. We have 5 minutes break while they are setting up.
especially from the Ministry of Culture.
Can we settle and reconvene? We need to be out here by 12:30. You've already introduced yourself, and I've just got a note from the secretary of the apology of the minister that he's out of the country. I take it that you're the leader of his delegation. Can I then hand over to you to make the presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Member. Also, the DG is also out of the country for the minister. So, formally tender the apology. We do apologize for not formally tendering the apologies of other two DNs. They've been called to a 39 Chief Whip debate in Parliament this morning. And as about, and I know Deputy Minister Mashekhar Amini was going to attend here. I didn't share it to attend, pardon. Another colleague has joined us, DDG Archie. She is responsible for rural infrastructure development. The presentation will be done by Tami from the Commission. Over to you, Tami.
Thank you, Acting DG. Professor and honorable members, we are presenting, focusing on the items that the committee requested us to address them on. The first one will be the number of outstanding claims and timetable for settling the outstanding claims. The second is the proposed process for the verification of land claims predating 1913. And the third one relates to capacity within the department to handle new and current claims. We start by just reintroducing the commission to state that it was established by the Restitution of Land Rights Act, which is a piece of legislation passed in 1994. Its functions are to solicit claims, to investigate them, and to prepare them for settlement by the minister. If there is no agreement on how claims must be settled, they are then referred by the commission to the Land Claims Court. Restitution takes the following forms: restoration, where we give back the land that was taken; provision of alternative state-owned land; prioritization in government programs of financial compensation. In terms of the business processes of the commission, there are certain stages that each claim gets taken through. The first one is lodgement, where a person who makes an allegation that they are entitled to restitution is required to lodge their claim with the commission. We do know that the lodgement of claims has been reopened for a period of 5 years, calculated from the 1st of July 2014, ending on the 30th of June 2019. And presently there are 14 sites where claims can be lodged, and very soon there are going to be mobile lodgement offices that are going to be visiting areas that are further from the lodgement offices. The second stage is the research and compliance stage, where the commission investigates the claim to determine whether it qualifies with the requirements for restitution. Stage three is gazette and notification for those claims that would have been accepted by the commission. They are published in the Government Gazette, and interested parties, including the current owner of the land, are notified. That all takes place in stage three. Stage four is claimant verification, when we determine the people who would benefit from the claim. Stage five are negotiations with both the claimants and the current owners of the land and state. Stage six is a settlement stage. Failing if there is no settlement, then stage six is also a referral to the Land Claims Court. And stage seven is implementation. Now, as at the 30th of June 2014, which is the last audited information that we have, a total of 8,446 claims that were outstanding. 787 are in the Eastern Cape province, where we only have 8 outstanding claims in the Free State province, 266 in Gauteng, 2,117 in KwaZulu-Natal, 751 in Limpopo, 2,672 in Mpumalanga, 132 in the Northern Cape, 84 in the Northwest, and 1,429 in the Western Cape. In slide, we also set out the numbers in terms of the stages as we have explained in the previous slide. Now, for the upcoming financial year 2015-2016, we have the following targets. We have, and these targets are informed by the resources that have been made available in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework processes. We're targeting to settle 463 new claims. We are targeting to finalize 373 claims. What happens, just to explain the finalized and the settled, what happens is that particularly with the outstanding claims, they are in respect of vast tracts of land. Most of them are on rural land. So when we get an agreement with, say for an example, there are 10 properties that are claimed, and 4 or 5 or 7 of the owners of current owners of the land are willing to make the land available for restitution processes, we would then process the claim and we would then call that phase one. And as we agree with other owners, we then get more phases. And then the second performance indicator on relating to finalize talks to those phase claims once all the land has been returned or all the financial compensation has been made available. The third performance indicator relating to phase projects is now counting the work that gets done between the first phase and the last phase, which would be finalized. And in terms of that, we are targeting 62 claims. And then we're also targeting to research 2,660 claims that were lodged by the cutoff date of 1998. We are also targeting to have 2 4x4 mobile offices operational in the next financial year. These mobile offices are going to assist us to reach the areas of the country that are far from our offices and where the people are not reachable using mobile communication units, which are sprinters. We then look at, in the next slide, at the budget that has been allocated for restitution in the 2015-2016 financial year. There is a total budget of 2.6 billion rand. 247 million of that is set aside for compensation of employees. Goods and services, we have been allocated 133 million, 2 million for capital assets, those being assets that are used once acquired, they are used for longer than 12 months, and 2.2 billion is then our capital budget allocation, which is used for the actual settlement of the claims, making a total of 2.6 billion rand. Now, in terms of how that budget is divided between national and regional offices, is that 48 million is allocated to national office, 334 million to the 9 provincial offices of the commission, and 2.2 billion is then going to be used for the actual settlement of claims. The baseline allocation for the MTF is 9.3 billion rand. Now, the first question that we have been asked to address the committee on is to set out the number of outstanding claims. We have done that, and then provide the timeline for settling the outstanding claims. Now, what we have done in the next few slides is to then set out how long it takes to process a land claim. And we have provided timelines in terms of the stages that a claim will go through. The lodgement process is done over a two-week period. The research of a claim is done over a 12-month period. And then we then list the activities that take place for research to be finalized. Stage 3, which is gazetting and notification, takes place over a two-month period. Stage 4, which is claimant verification over a two-month period. Stage 5, which is negotiations, on average it takes 3 months. Stage 6 is settlement, and that takes about 2 months. Stage 7 is implementation, which on average takes about 2 months. All of the 7 stages, on an average or a normal claim, will take about 24 months for a claim to be processed. The more complex, the longer it takes. We've got claims in some instances. There's a claim in Limpopo, for an example, on 756 farms. So obviously to research that claim will take longer, to process it would take longer. Over the MTS period, with the budget of 9.3 billion, we have targeted to settle 1,457 new claims. And obviously, with government planning, we can only focus for the MTF period. Now, the second issue that we were asked to address this committee on was relating to the verification for land claims predating 1913. Now, in the State of the Nation address in 2012, The president announced that government was considering the reopening of lodgement claims, and obviously that has happened, and also announced that there were also calls for exceptions to be made to the 1913 cut-off date for land claims. Now, for one to qualify for restitution, the constitution requires that the land that has been claimed must have been taken after 19 June 1913, and 19 June 1913 is the date on which the Native Land Act was promulgated. Now, those who lost land before 1913 cannot then, in terms of the Constitution, claim a right to restitution. Now, the exceptions to that rule have been proposed, and they are threefold. Firstly, to accommodate the descendants of the Khoi and Fan. Number two, to accommodate heritage sites, and then number three, to accommodate historical landmarks. Now, the department is in the process of developing a policy on these exceptions. The policy provides that the exception shall be a program of government, and they will not be a project like restitution. Restitution at some point will come to an end when all the claims would have been settled, whereas the exceptions are going to continue without having a timeline. Now, they will not then, the exceptions, be restitution in the classical sense, and they will not be tied to the Restitution of Land Rights Act. The exceptions will be implemented through legislation. We are considering, as part of the policy development processes, of amending some of our legislation that empower us to redistribute land, so that we can then provide a framework through which we will redress injustices relating to land that took place before 19 June 1913. The third question that we were asked to address is one that relates to capacity within the department to handle both the current and the new claims. In respect of the new claims, we have created 140 new posts that are that is staff that is going to be supporting the reopening of lodgement claims. We have more than 27,000 claims that have been lodged since the 1st of July. 2014. We have developed a lodgement system, and it's an electronic system, so that we can avoid some of the mistakes and challenges that took place in the previous round of lodgement and processing of claims. The Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act of 2014 requires that those claims that were lodged before the 1998 cut-off date, and which have not been finalized, that they must be prioritized. So the Commission is developing a prioritization plan that is going to make sure that it will first process those claims that were lodged before the 1998 cut-off date, before processing the new claims. Now, in the prioritization criteria, the principle is that the new claims can be processed together with the old claims If, for an example, the people are claiming the same piece of land as though as the land that was claimed in 1998, so all of those claims will be processed together, but the old ones will be prioritized for payment. So insofar as the claim will require a budget, then it's only those that were lodged before the 1998 cutoff date that are going to be prioritized until such time that they have been completed. Thank you very much.
Any additions? Is that enough? Okay. All right. Can I then ask a number of company questions to ask Honorable Smith? Any other hands? Honorable Singh, Honorable Prince, Honorable Lapkakhni, Honorable Gela. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got quite a few questions. Firstly, I want to know, in terms of the exceptions of the 1930 starting point, how far is the department with this legislation? And then I want to know why there's meetings held with some communities already discussing the specific exceptions with them. Because it seems to create false expectations amongst them. And are we going to do similar to the 50-50 draft policy to start propagating that before it actually is accepted? Then further, I want to know how far is the department with a database for this old claims? Do we have it? Is it in place yet? Or how far are we? If there's no database, how are the department going to know whether they've already a claim or not a claim on that specific land? And which one is new and which one is old? Then I want to know what will the department do if a piece of land has already been claimed and with the reopening period the same land is claimed by somebody else.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, what I'd like to know is the 24-month period, time period that has been set for the finalization of the claims, does the department normally do the claim within that period, or is it take longer than the 24 months that is set out? And my second question is on slide 4 on the KwaZulu-Natal total outstanding claims on the 30th of June. The figure of KwaZulu-Natal is very high. There's a reason for that particular province having such a high figure, whereas in the Free State is just 8, and Eastern Cape is even lower. That's the question that I'd like to ask.
Another Prince.
Mr. Singh touched on my question with the outstanding claims. I'd like to know what are the profiles of these claims, these outstanding claims. The other question that I want to ask is, how many claims from the old claims, the outstanding claims, is in court cases? You understand what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
I would like to know what is the number of new claims after it reopened in July 2014? Because I don't know if I missed it. And then I would like to know, if I look at the presentation, you see that on page 15, you said that 2,660 number of claims lost by 1998 to be researched, and the total number of claims, outstanding claims, is 8,464. That's old ones. So, according to my calculations, it's around about 31% of the old claims you're going to be doing now. Now, my question is, you're going only to be do the 31% now, and you said the old claims and the new claims are going to be done together. Where does the new claims fit in? That's the first question. Then it brings me also to the question of the funding. 180 billion rand was requested by the Department of Treasury, and only 8.7 billion has been allocated over the MTF period. At a statement that the minister made on last Friday, he said that 16.9 billion rand are needed for the old claims to be settled. Now, if I take the money and the cuts of around 50 billion rand in the medium-term framework to the country's budget as it is, with the backlog of the budget and the backlog of the claims, I would like the department, and as well as throughout the document, the sort of the underlying message that claims would be perceived quicker and faster and more efficient. I would like the department to give me an understanding and an analysis of how are they going to do that. Because to me, it doesn't make any sense on how the process can be speed up and be more effective. Then I would also like to know what is the commitment from the department and in resource or anything to the Office of the Valuer General. Sorry, my tongue knock on that word. We don't understand what I'm asking, because you didn't give us any input on that, your commitment to that. And then the last question, maybe it's not a question, that's a suggestion that I made to the chair for the committee. I would like the department to give us a detailed analysis of the link between land price and the pace of reform, with reference to the past reform performance, in order to clarify that even further for me or for the committee. Thank you.
Are there any other? Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the land that you've claimed, especially in Eastern Cape, affects development within certain municipalities. Now, the major problem that has been there is the signs of different claimants' committees, and you have not been able to resolve it, and it's dragging on for years and years and years. What plan do you have to resolve that problem? Secondly, I'm sorry to say so, but some of your officials are implicated in problems within these claims. One does not know how true that is. But what I have picked up from the ground is that some of your officials don't even go to these claims. I've written to your department, written to the DG, to the minister. I think Ralph knows the claim that I'm talking about. I spoke to Ralph Friday about it. Your officials, just your land claim officials, don't even go to these committees. Now, does the department expect these committees to go to court so that they can get a simple going to arrange a meeting? Ralph will explain the place I'm talking about. Spoke to the deputy minister about it. Do they still have to go to court to get you just to meet with the officials? Just a simple meeting with the officials. Then secondly, in some of the letters claim, thirdly and lastly, as the department got a right to what would develop on the land on a claim that is not finalized without considering the claimers? Thank you. Can you give me an answer on those things? Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for taking part in this. In fact, I want to know also, how realistic is this timelines for finalizing these claims? Because, you know, setting 3 months for negotiations and all of that, it seems like especially the remaining claims is the more complicated ones. That's why they are lost. And they are taking much longer. So I think, honestly, that the department is unrealistic in terms of the time frame. The second thing is, I've worked out over the past few years, we did an average of less than 300 claims a year. And if I calculate the as per the presentation, it's going to go like 3-4 fold that actual amount finalized. And I can see how that's going to happen. The other thing that I want to know is, or a concern that I actually want to raise is, I asked in last week, in question time, I've asked the minister specifically a oral a question about a land claim which is taking place where a village is established called Matibeling. And the minister was not aware of any claim, according to the deputy minister. Was not aware of any claim. She said, in fact, there is no land there. And those communities have been staying there since 1976. They can't get any services. They are staying in mud houses, something in a horror movie of the 1980s. And those people don't have toilets, they don't have water, they can't get RDP houses because there's a claim on the land. And I'm worried that the department is not even aware of claims that is taking place on that land. And those communities are suffering in the process. And I want to know how the department is going to make sure that we get this under control. Because if we don't know what we are busy with, how are we going to sort it out?
Okay. The claim that I'm talking about is Ivory Timber. Everything has been finalized with Ivory Timber. Former deputy minister told us we went to those people and everything was finalized, claimants, everything. But nothing is happening. The structures have totally deteriorated, totally gone. Their land is taken by illegal people. They can do nothing, they can't go to court or anything. The commissioner has been phoned on several times, your land commissioner, he does not go and meet those people. Your commissioner does not go and meet with those people. What must those, do you want those people to go to court or what? What should they do to you to get the government to sit down with them? Thank you.
Can you ask all the questions so that the department responded once, if there are any other questions? Perhaps the following up question to Mr. Smith and Mr. Keller's question will be these business processes, about 7 of them. Do you have a, I think there was a question also that was asked to the Deputy Minister as part of our question, whether there is an information system that tells the public on each of these pages where you can go to your laptop or computer and check on stage 1 in any of the municipalities. You check on stage 2 in any of the municipalities. Is that I'm just making an example about the 2 stages, but on all of them, are you able to know what is taking place in each one of these stages per municipality? So that the point that is raised by Honorable Smith of the Matibeling, you might be able. Then you go to the computer and pick the button of that particular municipality and see what are the stages with regard to the claims in that particular municipality and any other municipalities. The point I'm taking is whether you have that information system that is accessible to the public. Honorable, please. In fact, for both the processes, the first phase, and also how ready are we for the new claims, so that we don't, at the end of the 5-year period, we still left with another backlog. So we need to know now what challenges are the NDCs. If it's some of the, you know, things that you say you're going to do, you are unable to achieve them, what could then be the problem, so that those could perhaps be addressed there now. I'm not saying the committee is going to address them, but at least must have an idea so that we don't raise expectations that by 2019 that everything will be settled. Any other questions? So there won't be any other round. Other rounds will then be a form of routine questions. That's the last one, Honorable Taylor.
A clarity to the committee inquiry body. Some of the land that is claimed is on agricultural land. Now, what one wants to know, because of the agriculture here, what is the relationship between yourself and agriculture? Because the party has always been passed to make sure that that land is not, you know, when that 10% gone for waste, you know. What programs do they have? For instance, I'm talking now about one of the land is on the Mthatha Dam. There's enough water. What role is agriculture going to play there? You know, we need there's creative jobs for our people. You know, so what role is because when you come to rural, say agriculture, say rural, what is the working relationship between rural and agriculture? Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll allow the department to respond. As we indicated with the DAF, the same approach, we'll also expect written responses to the questions. But also, if there are any new questions from members, those will be submitted to the secretary and be channeled to the department. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I think we'll start with the last comment that was requested on we were first in terms of agriculture stuff, and then we'll deal with this and afterwards.
Thank you. Thank you, members. I think the question that you raised in terms of our relationship with the Department of Agriculture is a critical question where you are correct that in the past years there has been this disjuncture between the two departments in terms of the roles and responsibilities that we play in our support to farmers in general, and especially in terms of those who have received land either through redistribution or through the restitution program. Now, what we have been doing over the last few months is that we've been working jointly in terms of our development of both our strategic plan as well as our annual performance plans. And we've also been working jointly in terms of the various programs and strategies. And what we are doing now is that we are beginning to develop programs that we can implement jointly, rather than us now saying each of us will be responsible for support services, for example. We are trying to begin to say if that extension services, like was the presentation earlier, and that kind of technical support can come from the side of the Department of Agriculture, then the Department of Rural Development can focus on the land acquisition part, as well as perhaps the infrastructure component, especially in terms of your agro-processing and your external infrastructure as well. So we are trying now, given also the pressure that is there on the fiscus, to ensure that we begin to use our money much more effectively between ourselves. So we have presented these to both the teams of Department of Rural Development and Land Reform from the level of the DG down. Both ministers have also been meeting in bilaterals on this so that when we come to you next year and present our APP and our strat plan, you will begin to see that we're working in the same spaces across the country. We've also been able to produce a very good series of maps together with agriculture, beginning to map out in the country where we're going to be focusing on, what commodities we're going to be focusing on together, and what then will be required for those farmers to become successful. So we hope then that through that kind of process, together with our own recap and development program, we'll be able to bring the necessary funding to claimants once land has been acquired. And remember, we will deal not only with the agricultural components, but also then begin to deal with the sustainable human settlement components of those communities as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Just by way of a demonstration, maybe before I get to a demonstration and explanation, restitution was always meant to be a very short project of government. Initially, it was supposed to have taken place over a period of 5 years. The resources that were provided for restitution were mainly to settle claims. There was very little money that was set aside to develop systems, because this is something that was supposed to have been finalized very quickly. So for now, for the claims that were lodged before 1998, we are working on an Excel spreadsheet. For the claims that are lodged from the 1st of July up until 2019, we have developed a proper system that is going to help us process the claims and capture the information electronically as we go and process the claims. So, for an example, when we were looking at the issue of the claim in Masebeleng, in the Mokgalekwane municipality in Limpopo, this is exactly what we did. We went and identified all the claims in Limpopo. Then we would go and then identify all the claims in the Waterberg district, and then we would say in the Mokgalekwane local municipality how many claims there are. If you add, you're going to find that there are 34 claims in Mokgalekwane local municipality, and the detail about what land is being claimed is provided there. But what you do not see, Honorable Smith, which was a challenge that we had, is that Matebeleng is a village in this municipality. But now this village, what is the actual property that it is on? We found it difficult to understand whether the question is who are the people that were removed from farms and sent to Matebeleng, or whether the claim itself is in Matebeleng. And as such, what we prepared for our political principle was that perhaps if further information can be provided, so that we can know the exact claim that the inquiry relates. So to then answer the question as to whether is the database of outstanding claims lodged before 1998, yes, we do, and I've just demonstrated to you how it works. We are in the process of cleaning it up, but the basic information is there. The challenge that we currently have is making it accessible to the public in terms of having it in our website, having it in certain areas where the public can access it. With regards to the new claims, the database for the new claims, the Amendment Act requires us to establish a land restitution register. Now, one of the reasons why the claims are lodged electronically is so that we can have that land restitution register that is required. And again, there we are looking at the best way of making that information accessible to the public. Since about a year ago, we have changed the way in which we respond to inquiries that are asked by members of the public and claimants, by first starting with explaining these stages in the restitution process, and then explaining where their claim currently is, and how long it is going to take for the claim to get to finality. Now, the timelines that we provided as part of our presentation relates to what we may term a normal claim. The moment the claim is for an estate, where an estate file was closed in 1975, it's going to take longer for us to conduct research. It's going to take longer for us to identify who the actual beneficiaries are going to be. So the more complex the claim, the longer it takes. And In our presentation, particularly reference to the 24 months, it is not to say that all the claims outstanding are going to be finalized in the next 24 months. That is just a normal claim. The moment it gets prioritized to be dealt with, from that moment up until 25 months later, it should have been finalized. And the processes are such that the process is designed to take place in that manner. Now, if you look at this slide, it sets out the claims that were outstanding as at the 30th of June 2014. Now, if you look at the column verification and negotiations, that is stages 4 and 5. Stage 6 is settlement. So we already have 1,256 claims that are at a negotiation stage. And what we are targeted over the MTF period is to have 1,457 of those claims settled. Now, when we were targeting and when we were looking at the resources that have been given to us, we looked at in which stage are all of these claims. KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, that is where the majority of the claims came from. In fact, both of them put together accounted for more than half of the claims that were lodged in the country. So the claims that are outstanding are an indication of they are way more than half of the claims that were lodged. So the fact that the numbers are high does not reflect that those provinces are not prioritized. In fact, you will find the highest number of resources, both in terms of budget allocation and the actual officials that are employed working on claims, you will find them in the two provinces. After Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, you then get the Limpopo province. The Free State, the reason that 8 claims was because there was a few claims that were lodged in the Free State province. Honorable Smith, the acceptance is a very complicated process that the department has started. We've said that the exceptions are threefold to accommodate the descendants of the Khoi and the Fan Heritage Sites and Historical Landmarks. This project started in 2012. We spent a considerable amount of time organizing the Khoi and Fan communities. When the minister engaged some of the leadership for the first time, he was told that never in history have a Khoi and Fan people been given an opportunity by government to just discuss among themselves. And we then held so far 2 consultative conferences with the Khoi and the Fan communities as part of organizing them, where the reference group that we work with for purposes of policy development, and we report back every year to that structure that we established. And then those delegates, in the last 2 conferences, in the last 2 calendar years, we had just over 1,000 leaders, Khoi and Fan leaders attending those conferences, then they go back and report progress. Then the approach of policy development that was adopted by the department since the publication of the Green Paper in September 2011 is one where it's a consultative one. Minister would say, instead of inviting people to dinner, we are inviting them to the kitchen where food is being cooked. So we are working with these communities, actively trying to come up with solutions to the problem statements that have been identified. It was announced in 2012 that government is considering. It was not the announcement was not that these exceptions are going to be implemented. And to the extent that they do not require legislation, we already have 2 projects that we are implementing almost on a pilot basis. One is in the Eastern Cape and one is in the Western Cape, where land is being acquired because which was taken before 1930 as part of these exceptions. The lessons that are being learned from those 2 projects are also incorporated into policy development. Indeed, we expect that there is going to be new claims lodged on land that we have already given to beneficiaries that lost land before 1998. Now, how are we going to resolve disputes coming from there is just one, research. the research is going to tell you which of these two is entitled to the land. And should it happen that the person that got land before 1998 is not the correct person, then that land is going to be given to the correct person. And when you and then government would be required to pay compensation that's just and equitable. And in determining what's just and equitable is in that instance where you receive land incorrectly from government, compensation that would be payable can be zero. And then the land would then be passed on to the correct beneficiaries. We also expect that a lot of instances like that is going to be where people through the verification process, where we look at who was removed and who are the beneficiaries of this claim. When we some people were left out of the process, they didn't know that it was taking place, and they feel left out, and some may want to lodge claims. And to settle their claims, we'll just be incorporating them into communal property associations as members of that communal property association, because they would have held the right communally before dispossession. The profile of the outstanding claims, they are mostly rural claims, and they are mostly on agricultural land. The people who understand agriculture would say 80% of the land is used to generate 20% of the food, and 20% of the land is used to generate 80% of the food. These claims that we are talking about are mostly on the 80% of the land that generate the food. So as we go and settle these claims, we are mindful of that, making sure that through interactions that the DDG explained earlier, we are able to target properly, and there are mechanisms put in place to make sure that we do not lose production. The claims that are outstanding, in terms of our targets for research, the law says we must first deal with the claims lodged before 1998. So what we do now is that when we are researching a claim, our targets are just in relation to 1998. And when we go and research, we would from time to time go into the new lodgement system to check whether there aren't any competing claims which would be on the same piece of land. The Office of the Valuer General, which is created by the Property Valuation Act, the functions of the Valuer General is going to be to codify Section 25(3) of the Constitution, to say to South Africans, this is what just and equitable compensation means. And the Valuer General will also then conduct evaluations for land reform, land acquisitions, which would include restitution. So the commitment, the interface between the Valuer General and land acquisition, redistribution and restitution, is that it's going to assist in our scenario to fast track our stage 5, which is negotiations, because there's now going to be norms and standards for valuations which are not there. We use international ones, and the Valuer General is going to be conducting the valuation. So we think that the process is then going to be a little bit quicker. The analysis of the link between price and taste, will respond to that one in writing. And then I'm mindful of time, and there's still quite a few. The Highbury timber claimants, that has been brought to our attention, and within the next 14 days, we are going to make sure that the community is visited there, and the required assistance is provided. And that visit in the next 14 days will either be from the senior officials in the Eastern Cape, or from national office. Within the next 14 days, we will make sure that we have visited all of them. And then the rest of the question would respond to them in writing.
Yeah. Thank you very much. As already they were requested for some members to attend meetings. This is a place of meeting. You will go from one meeting to the other. And I don't see us leaving this place before 8 today, because of meetings that we are going to be having after this one. So let me apologize for cutting you short, but as we had indicated earlier, that you will also have another opportunity of receiving the responses in writing, but also the opportunity for members to make follow-up questions in writing. Thank you very much, much appreciated. No questions?
Can we get a copy of those outstanding, please? Yes.
Oh, you mean this data highlighted here? Oh, okay. All right. I think they will be forwarded to the secretary, and then the secretary will make them available to everybody. Thank you. Yeah. At this age, we, members, we are going to consider the minutes of the last meeting, and then we will be done with the meeting. The only item now we're dealing with, I think it's the concern of members, with the minutes. I thought that there was a lunch. We're going to invite you to lunch, but I don't see any now.
Yeah.
So there's no point of keeping you. Yeah. Otherwise, we're going to deal with the minutes and then invite you to lunch. Yeah. But if you see it coming, then you can come back. thank you. All right. Members, can we then consider the minutes of the meeting of the 11th of November? H1. Check if the names have been correctly spelled. H2. H3. H4 and H5. Can we have a mover and a second for the addressing of the minutes? Honorable Gaila by Honorable Prince. That takes us to the end of the meeting, and I declare the meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.